Chapter 5. Learning to Disobey. Interlude 2. They were late for dinner, mostly because Jupiter had forgotten that she didn't actually have a ship of her very own, and there had very nearly been a civil war in Kane's kitchen between Gernageth, who wanted to transport them aboard her troop carrier, and Chicanery Knight, who insisted she take his shuttle. Crisis was averted, however, with the arrival of a small, humanoid woman who looked part crab. She was completely bald, not even eyebrows or eyelashes, but her skin more than made up for lack of hair. She had iridescent blotches of green and yellow over her skull. Her face was bright blue, her ears were blue with red feelers sprouting from the tips, and her eyes were pink orbs with tiny pinprick pupils. Two more red feelers sprouted from under her chin, while a pair of feather-like fronds dangled on either side of her neck. They had bright, red, frilly edges, with blue and green centers, ringed in yellow. Her arms, crossed over her drab plate armor, had a strange exoskeletal structure, which ran from her elbows down and over her hands. This was a blotched, fiery red and orange, blown to white in places with colors so vivid that they seemed to glow. All in all, it put Jupiter in mind of a peacock's tail crossed with a magic rainbow, dusted with the shavings from a box of neon crayons. She was an inch shorter than Jupiter, lithe and slim, yet exuded such a hostile presence that Gernageth took a step back, and Chicanery Knight went mute in surprise. Unless they were simply taken aback by the colors. One arm snapped out, lightning fast. Chicanery Knight flinched, and the woman saluted Jupiter. "Greetings, Your Majesty," she said, in a dry, rasping voice. "Lieutenant Smasher Mantine of the 95th Legion of Sea Reavers, at your service. Your chariot awaits."
"My chariot?" said Jupiter. Blinking, rather.
There was a crash in the hall, and Morlanda stuck her head in. "Come along, Lady Jupiter," she said, looking entirely too perky for a woman who was half boat. "I polished my stern specially. Let's go show this Filian brat who he's dealing with." So it was they left Earth aboard Smasher's corvette, which Kane pointed out with satisfaction not only looked impressive, but had a lot of large guns and a unit of elite legionnaires. "I'm going to have dinner with him, not start a war," Jupiter protested.
"The one leads to the other more often than you might think," Chicanery Knight said, diffidently brushing a piece of lint off the shoulder of Jupiter's coat.
"Great! That's a real confidence booster. Thanks. Anything to be of service, ma'am." 5. Learning to Disobey. An advanced level of training for service animals who must recognize and ignore commands given to them when they are not in their handler's best interests. The first thing Jupiter said when she saw Prince Filian's ship was, "Is that a flower or a boat?"
"I believe the technical term is palace ship," Kane said. He did not sound impressed.
Jupiter looked out the window at the floating, pearly object that reminded her of a peony.
"This is going to be Titus all over again," she sighed. "No, it won't," said Kane.
Jupiter tore her eyes away from the improbable ship, looking up at the man beside her. Kane was in full combat gear, black armor, boots, and a special shield generator for his wings. He'd put the eyeliner on thick, making his blue gaze even more piercing. If he had hackles, Jupiter was certain they would be up. "No," said Jupiter, taking his hand. "You won't have to break through a wall of warhammers this time." His fingers closed around her hand. "And you're not getting married." If Hilaria Savin was surprised to see Jupiter arrive wearing plain clothes, riding in a chariot with a real and talking woman attached to the prow, flanked by a Sargon and a winged Lycantant, and preceded by a small legionnaire who looked like a prism had vomited on her face, she hid it very well. "We are honored that your majesty has accepted our humble invitation," she said as she hurried down the gangway, which was sculpted to look like the curling stamen of a flower, and bowed low to them. She had to shuffle hastily out of the way as Smasher continued marching, leading the little procession straight up and into the gaping maw of the palace ship, which opened before them like the petals of a rose. Falling into a trot beside Jupiter, she continued to speak, a little frantically. "If your majesty is in need of any material items, jewelry, frocks, shoes, and the like, the Nerefsteria would be happy to provide..." Jupiter fixed the little woman with a cold, blank stare. "I'm wearing this," she said. She'd chosen her nicest pair of black slacks, a black dress shirt, and the Aegis jacket Captain Singh had given her as a present when she heard how much Jupiter liked it. She was also wearing her gravity boots, because it couldn't hurt. "Yes, of course, your majesty," said Hilaria Savin weakly. They had reached the petal-like gate which led into the body of the ship, and Smasher had at least deigned to stop on account of the fact that Prince Filian had just dropped down via a zero-g beam and come to rest in her path. From all the floral motifs associated with his ship, Jupiter had been expecting someone equally extravagant. What she found, when Morlanda came to a grudging halt behind Smasher, was a medium-sized man with pale, silky skin and dark hair brushed back in a severe wave. His eyes were brightly hazel and danced with a light that seemed to spill out over his sculpted cheeks. Though not exceptionally tall, he gave off the appearance of being larger than he was by standing very straight and having an impeccable body. Jupiter could tell he had an impeccable body because his suit, which was more like an understated evening dress, clung tightly to his sides and left absolutely nothing to the imagination. He smiled when he saw her looking, his lips red and glossy, but otherwise he wore remarkably little makeup. Jupiter began to wonder if their impending interaction, she had no plans to actually eat anything, might not be as uncomfortable as she feared. "Do not trouble our guest, Hilaria," he said, his voice a pleasantly soft rumble. "Lady Jupiter, it is an honor to meet you in person." He bowed and waited patiently while Cain helped her down from the chariot. "Yes, hi," said Jupiter, suddenly feeling underdressed and awkward, like Cinderella turning up at the ball barefoot in her rags. "But I'm wearing rocket boots," she reminded herself, and refused to believe she would have felt more comfortable in a slinky, flattering dress. "You sounded like you really wanted to meet me, so I figured I'd better come see what the deal is." She stuck out a hand instead of returning the bow. Prince Filian was only momentarily unbalanced. He reached forward and clasped her hand delicately with his fingertips, giving it the merest shake, before pulling his back into his voluminous sleeve. "You are as forceful a personality as I was informed," he said, light amusement dancing in his eyes. Behind her, Cain began to growl. It was very low and so quiet it might have been mistaken for the grumble of a far-off engine. "So," said Jupiter, a little louder than was needed, "dinner?" Dinner was served in a lavish room that put Jupiter more in mind of a boudoir than a dining room. The polished wooden table stood on a small pedestal of greenish stone, sculpted to look like a giant leaf, and the chairs had cushions so deep and soft she sank in for inches. An elaborate glass flower hung from the ceiling, doubled as a light fixture, and the walls were covered in blooming vines growing up through holes in the floor. The air was thick with their sweet, heady perfume, concentrated by the rich green carpet which covered the floor. After checking the room over thoroughly, Kane declared himself grudgingly satisfied and went to stand outside the door, across from Fillion's own guard, so the two royals could talk in privacy. That was the reason Fillion gave for sending them outside, but Jupiter saw Kane touch his ear discreetly, and she nodded. She had her communication button in, and it was on. Kane would be able to hear everything that passed between them inside the room. It was this knowledge which prevented her from panicking the moment the door closed behind him. Squaring her shoulders, she faced Prince Fillion down the length of the table, gripping the edge of it for support. "Right," she said. "First things first. I'm not marrying you." Prince Fillion paused in the middle of taking the lid off a dish of what looked like an entire roast bird of some kind, garnished with small purple flowers. He gave her an arch look, and then laughed. "I didn't expect you would," he said. "But it got your attention, did it not?"
"It got me curious," Jupiter said, "about what you really want."
Prince Fillion began working his way down the table, uncovering more and more dishes. Some were pies or soups or loaves of bread, the theme of flowers repeated again and again.
"Despite appearances, Lady Jupiter,"
he was saying as he took the lid off a platter of delicate pastries with pansies stuck in the middle,
"I am a simple man with simple wants. I desire peace and prosperity for myself and my friends, comfort and security for my loved ones, and perhaps a little fun on the weekends. I can see why you would suspect me of ulterior motives, given your past experiences. But Estart is not Abraxas. I meant what I said when I suggested the merger of our enterprises would be mutually beneficial."
He had come up to her end of the table, and Jupiter was aware of a faint perfume which breathed off him whenever he moved. It was fresh and clear and put her in mind of water lilies.
"I am in the presence of a man who can pull off floral perfume," she thought suddenly. "Be careful."
He reached across to the dish directly in front of her, another blast of water lilies, and in removing its domed lid revealed not a dish of food, but an elaborate bouquet of brilliant orange buds, tightly curled shut. A faint tracery of blue lines suggested a barrier protecting them, which was confirmed a moment later when Prince Fillion deactivated it with a touch of his hand, and the buds unfurled into luscious, spreading flowers. They had bright gold centers and breathed a heady scent over Jupiter that made her dizzy.
"Mezzarine lava blossoms," he explained, giving the dish an artful turn so Jupiter could see the flowers from a better angle.
It brought another waft of their strong odor, and Jupiter thought she might sneeze.
"They grow only in the Alcazar of my personal estate, and are a variety of my own devising. I make a present of them to you, with no obligations attached."
In the realm of romantic overtures, it was neither as presumptuous nor as creepy as Titus's monstrous ring, but Jupiter still felt awkward as she took the plate and turned it about, trying her best not to inhale.
"How lovely," she said, setting it aside.
Fillion pushed the dish of floral pastries aside and rested casually against the edge of the table. He was close enough that he could reach out and touch her, but he kept his hands carefully folded in his lap.
"There is more loveliness where I come from," he said softly. "I know your introduction to the world at large was not a pleasant one,
but it is my hope that I will be able to convince you of its incredible capacity for beauty. Jupiter looked up at him. Had the lights changed, or had his skin taken on a faint golden aura? And why was she just now noticing the adorable cleft in his chin, and the way his cheeks dimpled slightly when he gave her a small, secret smile? She blinked fiercely, trying to clear her head. "If it's beauty built off of dead planets, I don't want to see it," she said, the words surprisingly thick and bitter in her mouth. She swallowed, her throat suddenly dry. Instinctively, she reached for the nearest glass, only to find it filled with a rich red wine. Not the thing, considering she was beginning to feel dizzy. "Oh, I do agree," said Prince Filian, his voice gone even more soft and luxuriant, almost like a cat's purr. "Do not think that there are none who find the current situation untenable. In fact, there are many who actively seek a means to a better way of life, of which I am but a humble party, which is one reason why I believe a partnership between us could be exceptionally fruitful with our unique assets." "What unique assets?" Jupiter said, but the words were even harder to get out this time. It felt like she was getting drunker by the minute, but she hadn't touched anything. Still, her mind felt like it was circling the drain, and she had to fight vigorously to maintain her capacity for critical thought. Prince Filian didn't answer. He was smiling at her with a disconcerting radiance. Jupiter had to struggle to keep her mind on track. She was here to discover what he wanted, not to moon about what a cutie pie he turned out to be. Or... "We may leave such technical discussions for later, don't you think?" the prince said. Yes, technical discussions were hard, and Jupiter didn't want to think hard right now. Why didn't she want to think hard? Why was it hard to think? She tried to stand up, and found she could barely lift herself out of her chair. "I don't..." she said, stopped, took a breath, "those infernal flowers," and went on. "Feels so good." "Would you like to lie down?" Prince Filian asked, finally reaching out and gently brushing her sleeve with his hand. His touch felt like fire and the kiss of sunlight, and desire burst in the back of Jupiter's mind in a way that was wholly unexpected and terrifying. With a supreme effort, she pulled her arm away. "Don't touch me," she ground out. She was doubled over the table now, her nose practically in the hideous orange flowers. The flowers. The smell. With a shaking hand, she swept the plate off the table, scattering the blossoms across the floor. The action disturbed the stagnant air, and in the relative freshness, she felt her mind rally. "Cain," she said, levering herself out of her chair, but not letting go of the table. "Get me out of here." "Your wolf can't hear you," said Prince Filian. His voice was calm, but it sounded harsher than it had a moment ago, and there was a steel note in it that sounded like cold triumph. As soon as the door shut, his button went dead. Cain looked across at Filian's guard, who was an armored security synth with a particularly blank face. It must have been more perceptive than it looked, however, because it calmly raised its sidearm and fired at his head. Except his head was no longer there by the time the blast hit. Cain ducked and dived at the synth, butting it in the midsection and then punching straight into its neck when its head rocked forward. He got a handful of armor, tore it aside, and then came in with his other hand and severed the synth's power conductor. "Gurnageth, report," he growled into his general comm before the body even hit the floor. "They don't seem to like us here," came the gravelly response. So the block only applied to the people inside the room. That was something. "Doesn't matter," said Cain.
We won't be staying. Get Morlanda and bring her around. We are leaving immediately. And if someone tries to stop us? The Sargon asked, her voice like the keel of a ship grinding on deadly shoals. Do whatever it takes, Kane said. He was already turning to the door, trying the handle. Of course it was sealed. Ducking aside as more guards arrived on the scene. Violence happened then. Or rather, Kane happened. It was difficult fighting in close quarters, but he was nothing if not adaptable. He had his shield, his boots, and his gun, and discovered that he could punch people with his wings after all. Somewhere in the middle of it, he managed to call Smasher. I need you at the dining room, he said, a little jerky, as he picked up a guard and used it to knock down an approaching column. Coming, came the harsh response. I am securing his control hub. Piss on his control hub, Kane roared, shooting the knees out of the nearest guard before bringing his shield up again. I need you to open a door. Slowly, Jupiter turned to look at Prince Filian. He'd taken a step closer and was reaching for her. She could not, on any account, allow him to touch her again. She'd do something she would regret, and not in a badass way. Let me go, she said, forcing each word out, having to remind herself between each one what they meant. Prince Filian smiled, and Jupiter felt a strange dissociation sweep through her, as part of her saw a glowing, angelic face, and the other saw a calculating, triumphant smirk. Or what? He asked, his voice a purr and a hiss at the same time. You have no teeth, Lady Jupiter. You didn't even discipline Titus, your genetic progeny. Balaam left you an army and you squander it. You don't know what miracles you possess. You let them waste away while the universe goes on committing inconceivable atrocities for want of a solution to which you hold the key. Gurnageth and Morlanda arrived first, the former with a piece of guard still stuck between her teeth, and the latter wielding an improvised club made out of what appeared to be a piece of reinforced containment bar. Kane looked at them across the sea of destroyed guards, which had grown around him in the past few minutes. They try to get you too? He asked. They tried, said Gurnageth grimly. I hit Hilaria on the head, said Morlanda, hefting her weapon. Where is our queen? Wordlessly, Kane gestured at the locked door, which had so far resisted the convincing arguments of his gun, his boots, his fist, and even his temporary portal generator. Allow me, said Gurnageth, cracking her scaly knuckles. Striding forward, she threw herself at the door, partially propelled by her wings, and slammed her whole weight against it. It didn't so much as dent. Said Gurnageth, apparently unharmed, but Kane noticed she was rubbing her knuckles tenderly. There was a scraping sound above them, and a temporary portal opened to allow the rainbow disaster that was Smasher to drop through the ceiling. You're late, said Kane. I locked down the whole ship so his reinforcements won't bother you, snapped Smasher, by way of greeting. You're welcome. Now, what was it you needed? Kane pointed at the door. You want it open? Smasher asked, her blue lips pulling into a snarling grin. Kane nodded. Stand back, said Smasher, and walked up to the door. It was twice as tall as she was, the wooden facade blasted away by Kane's attempts to reveal the reinforced alloy beneath. Smasher surveyed it critically. She brought her fists up into her chest, and then, no matter how many times Kane saw it happen, he still couldn't track the motion with his eyes. Stinger had said even he had trouble following the movements of Smasher's punch, but he'd said that it wasn't the impact of her armored fists that caused the most damage, but the shockwave they generated.
This time it looked like a blur, a flash of fiery red and white, and with a deafening snap, a visible crack appeared in the door's hitherto impenetrable surface. Smasher's pink eyes narrowed dangerously, blue lips pursed, and one red feeler twitched in annoyance.
"Let's try that again," she said.
Fillion seemed a little angry now. It was hard to tell. Jupiter's brain was having difficulty making sense of the order of things. What was going on again? She needed to get out. Right. She tried making for the door and nearly collapsed, so she leaned against the chair and tried to think of a solution. "If you touch me, I'll kick you," she said, for good measure. She could remember that much, at least. A shadow swept across her vision. Prince Fillion had come around and was collecting the orange flowers from where they scattered across the floor.
"You are resisting the effects of their pollen remarkably well," he said.
Was that supposed to mean something? It probably did. Jupiter glared at him for good measure. Where was Cain? Cain should have been here, she was pretty sure.
"It must be a side effect from being raised on Earth," the prince remarked. "It would be better if you didn't fight it, however. It will make things so much more comfortable for you."
He rose and turned, and he was holding the flowers, pushing them towards her face. Jupiter had just enough presence of mind to lean her head back, and the door exploded. In her foggy, bemused state, Jupiter's only thought was, "Oh, so that's why they call her Smasher." The explosion had left a ragged hole in the wall. Broken pipes had begun to smoke, and there was a crackle of electricity from the severed circuits. The remains of the door scattered across the room. A particularly large piece had struck Prince Fillion in the back and knocked him to the ground. And in the smoke and ruin stood Smasher Mantine, a blaze of colors that dimmed even the golden flowers. Her armored fists were raised and her feelers all on end. Jupiter felt herself sliding off the chair. She never hit the ground. There was a blur of black and brown, and she landed in a strong, warm embrace. She smelled leather and space armor, strong, earthy scents, and something that reminded her of stardust.
"I'm here," said Cain,
gently gathering her into his arms.
"Aye," said Jupiter, with difficulty. I think I want to go home."
The smell was overpowering. Pheromones and hormones and something that tickled the inside of his nose. Pollen? Cain got his answer a moment later when Smasher stomped into the room, took one look at the orange flowers clasped in the unconscious entitled's hands, and snapped them up. Holding them at arm's length, she ran out of the room. He heard Morlanda say, "What the hell are... Oh!" And then the rev of her gravity jets and the faint sizzle of petals being disintegrated. This time, Gernigeth had also entered, looking around at the destruction with guarded respect. Then she saw the entitled on the ground and pulled him up roughly by his collar.
"What is the meaning of this?"
she growled, giving the man a full dose of her putrid breath. The Sargons bred bacteria in their mouths, so even a non-lethal bite would prove fatal if left untreated. The entitled shuddered and moaned.
"He has compromised our queen," Cain said dully.
Compromised was an understatement. Jupiter was barely conscious, yet had an elevated heart rate, and there was something about her that didn't smell right. But it was impossible to isolate in an environment so densely packed with other smells.
"Coward," said Gernigeth. "Can I eat him?"
Smasher asked, putting her head back inside. The feelers under her neck snapped open and shut in anticipation, and Gernigeth gave her a strange look. If Cain had to guess, judging by the way the Sargon's neck frilled out and her pupils dilated, she might have been a little smitten. Unless it was just the hormones in the air. They were definitely going to start affecting him if he stayed in the room for much longer.
No. No eating anyone, mumbled Jupiter, feebly raising a hand.
Kane caught it with one of his own, cupping hers gently in his huge paw and guiding it back to rest on her belly.
Put him under arrest, he growled, even as Smasher clicked in disappointment. You secure the ship, he told her firmly. I will take Her Majesty to medical.
So speaking, he strode through the wreckage, exhaling deeply as soon as he was out in the relatively fresh air. Gurnageth and Smasher, being significantly less mammalian, could handle the cleaning up.
What did he do? Morlanda demanded, as soon as she saw him.
She hefted her piece of rebar threateningly.
Is he still alive?
Drugged her, I think, said Kane,
climbing up onto Morlanda's seat.
He's alive, and he's going to stay that way. Contact the corvette. Tell them we require extraction. I don't like flowers,
Jupiter mumbled against his chest. Her body felt frighteningly small and soft in his arms. He'd carried her before, so many times, and barely felt the weight. But before she'd always been strong and hard as steel, so vehemently alive that he'd never realized just how tiny she was. Now she was almost fluid, she was so relaxed. He had to keep readjusting her head so her neck didn't get strained, and gazing up at him with eyes that didn't quite focus. Now they were out of the overpowering mix of scents, he could smell something on her that was both hot and spicy, and yet sour. A disturbing perversion of her own scent. More disturbing still, it didn't seem to be evaporating like the rest of the smells, which they'd brought with them out of the room. And Kane realized with dawning horror that he was smelling her. It was a good thing they were heading for the nearest ejection port. If that entitled had still been in close proximity, Kane might have taken a bite out of him himself. The medical team aboard the corvette was a unit of trauma surgeons, first aid medics, regen specialists, and a gifted chemist. They were also, in Kane's opinion, completely useless.
What do you mean you can't help her?
He asked, letting his words out slowly, one at a time, so they didn't turn into snarling bites. The chemist, who had been nominated unanimously by the team as the one most qualified to diagnose and treat the injured monarch, nervously tightened her ear down. She was a heavily modified synth whose only human characteristic was her somewhat battered faceplate, and got about on 8 spidery legs, any one of which could double as an extra hand when needed. I mean to say, there is nothing I can do for her, she said, with the excruciating calm only a synth was capable of. It is not a toxin with which I am familiar. It seems to have been fully absorbed by her system, and without a clean sample, I could not generate an antidote. However, she added hastily, seeing her untimely retirement in the expression on Kane's face, it also appears that she is metabolizing it with only a moderate amount of distress. At current rates, I estimate it will be out of her system within 12 hours, and she should begin feeling better within the next 6. In the meantime, the best thing that can be done for her is to rest in a quiet, safe environment and stay well hydrated. And you don't need me to administer water. Kane wanted to rip off the synth's head and scream directly into her twiddly little ear that any amount of distress was unacceptable. That, furthermore, there was something very, very wrong with his queen that needed fixing now. But since he could only describe this wrongness as a sour aftertaste to her scent, and the way it made his skin crawl, and the fact that seeing her so small and soft and weak terrified him more than a wall of warhammers, he just rested his fist on the exam table and tried to calm his breathing. A tired, floppy hand was raised into the air, patting at his arm, before working its way up to rest on his shoulder.
"Okay, Kane,"
Jupiter whispered, but her eyes were unfocused and staring off over Kane's left ear, and there was an unnaturally bright pink blush on her face. The hand on his shoulder felt around, dragging itself across to rest on his chest. He felt it only by the touch of her heat. She didn't have the strength to put any pressure behind it. It made his heart hammer in the not fun way. The way that said, "Danger, danger, fight, fight!" But there was no one to fight. Just the stupid drug in his queen's system, which was one of the few places he could not go to fight for her.
"Don't be scared," Jupiter slurred, and Kane realized he'd started shaking.
He took a few deep breaths, concentrating on exhaling fully, and she smiled lopsidedly at him.
"That's good," she drawled. "Just keepin' breathing."
"I do not recommend leaving her alone, however," the synth commented. "If you like, we can put her under observation for the night." The thought of Jupiter in one of Medical's observation pods, which Kane knew and hated from intimate experience, sent a whole new wave of revulsion through him. He shook his head.
"I will watch her," he said, gently lifting her off the table.
She curled into him, soft and hot, but still sour-smelling. It wafted up from her so strongly he had to shut his eyes and breathe through his mouth for a moment before he could carry her out of Medical and up two decks to the empty suite of rooms, which were his by rights, but until now he had never thought he'd use. They were dry and sterile, with the sort of stark tidiness that only comes from not being lived in. But they were safe, secure, and, most of all, quiet. He laid Jupiter carefully on the bunk, which should have been his, never minding that she still had her boots on, and went through to the little washroom to fill a glass of water. When he came back, she was sitting up on the bunk, had shed her jacket, and was working on her shirt.
"Majesty, no,"
Kane said, coming to kneel before her and gently pulling her hands away.
"Too hot," Jupiter mumbled, plucking ineffectually at the hem of her shirt.
She wasn't too hot. That was the problem. Kane could tell by touch whether a human was running a fever, and Jupiter's physical profile hadn't shown an elevated temperature anyway. Whatever she was feeling, it was all in her own head.
"That's just the drug talking,"
Kane told her, even though he doubted she could understand.
"Here, this will help," he said, pressing the glass into her free hand.
"What's this?"
Jupiter said, peering into the glass.
"Water," said Kane. "Drink it. It will help you clear the poison."
"Don't feel sick," Jupiter muttered, but drank the water, sloppily.
Kane had to go get a towel and dry her chin and neck afterwards. She was far too malleable, he thought, feeling her tilt her head back agreeably, baring her throat unnecessarily to his ministrations. Even scared and confused and terminally naive, she'd never been so passive. She was smiling at him, dopily, and Kane tried to be comforted by the sight, but there was something not right with the smile. Something too hazy and soft. Not all there.
"It's nice,"
she said, leaning further back so he had to bend over her.
"Like you taking care of me."
"I always take care of you," Kane said. "Even when you didn't know me. Even when I didn't know you," he thought. "I always will," he said aloud,
taking advantage of her reclining position to try and get her feet back up on the bunk. She didn't resist, but her feet felt limp and heavy under his hands, and she sank back against the bed, stretching her shoulders in a way that was almost suggestive.
"You'll take care of me now, won't you?"
she asked, trailing a finger up his arm and back down again. Kane felt it, even through his coat, sharp as a current of electricity.
So hot, Kane. Need something. Need you. I've got some fire in me, eating me. Need you. Want you.
Her limp hand turned momentarily claw-like, but then fell away, as if that momentary action had drained her energy. But now Kane could smell, heady and musky, even under the sour aftertaste, the unmistakable smell of ardent arousal. And that was not exactly surprising, he realized bitterly. In the vast ocean of underhanded tricks and schemes employed by the entitled, drugging a prospective partner with an aphrodisiac was not unheard of. It did make him wish that he'd let Gurnageth eat Fillion. No, he wished he'd had the nerve to ignore Jupiter's orders and eat the bastard himself. Because now he'd pulled away, and Jupiter was pawing at him, practically whining his name, and she smelled like a hot summer afternoon, with freshly tilled earth and the hum of insects. A place Kane had never been, but always imagined when he thought of home. She also smelled of something richer, darker, blood and spice, and the sharp, overpowering scent of want. It was so strong it momentarily eclipsed the sour aftertaste, making Kane dizzy. He could feel his own body responding, even while his mind dug in its heels and tried to back away from the thought. She was compromised. She wasn't thinking clearly. This was not the time to... Kane, she breathed, having somehow pulled herself upright again so she could cling to his neck, pushing her face up into his and breathing into him. She said his name again, stretching it into two syllables.
Kane.
The problem was, Kane couldn't resist the smell of her arousal. It bypassed his carefully guarded human brain and went straight to the base animal, which responded immediately and with vigor. It still amazed him sometimes, how he could watch Jupiter changing her clothes, even change her clothes for her, and if she wasn't aroused, he felt nothing. Her body was just a body, albeit a pleasing one to look at. It didn't stir anything in him beyond an increase in the general background radiation of affection he constantly felt for her. One whiff of her arousal, however, and he could feel himself beginning to devolve into a lust-crazed animal. As he was now, drenched in it, it was all he could do to gently clasp her delicate head and push it away. "Now isn't a good time," he whispered. He felt her head shake between his hands.
"Now is the best time, Kane," she said, sounding almost her old self. "I am so wet, you wouldn't believe. Can't have you eat me out. You drown in it. Want you inside me, Kane. Fill me up with that wonderful cock of yours. Always feel so good. You'd like that, wouldn't you?"
The really horrible thing was, he would. His body had answered her call like the well-trained dog he was, and the base part of him wanted nothing more than to rip her flimsy pants off, bend her over the bunk, and... But he was not his base self. That was a part of him, yes, but there was an equally important part that was disgusted by the idea. That part of him found it so revolting he felt physically ill, and caught between the two warring desires, he was rendered momentarily frozen. Jupiter took that as an opportunity to kiss him. And he couldn't stop her. He felt himself close down a little in disbelief, like he always did. But his lips parted at her unspoken request, and then he was kissing her back, fiercely, almost ferociously. And she opened up for him, gave way to his advances, in a way that felt like surrender, and the beast inside him howled in triumph. She tastes wrong. Kane jerked his head back so fast his neck complained, and it took a lot for his neck to complain about anything. The sourness was in her. Not only her scent, but her saliva and her skin. Like a lemon gone bad. It made Kane's mouth go temporarily numb, and sent his instincts into a tailspin. He wanted her. Wanted her more than anything. Any way she'd have him. Any way she'd let him have her. He didn't want her like this. Luckily, thanks to her scrupulous forethought, he knew exactly what to do. "No," he said, placing one hand carefully on her shoulder and pushing her away. For once, he met resistance, but the wrong kind. She pressed back into his hand, shifting so his grip slid down to rest on her breast. He took his hand away. "Please, Kane," she said, practically plowing into his chest. "I need this. I need you. Now." He was excruciatingly hard, and he could feel his pulse pounding in his skull, but his own arousal had faded into the background. He could smell the sourness now, hidden in her arousal, and it was enough to let all the hot air out of him. There was a lot of beast inside him, but that wasn't all of him. He was a person, just like she'd said. "We're alike, in all the ways that matter. You're a good person." His queen. Her past actions coming back to save him from herself. He had to shut his eyes. "I can't," he said. He took a breath. "I don't want to."
"Come on, Kane," said Jupiter, sounding more annoyed than anything else.
One of her hands strayed down, groping him, clumsily through his trousers, and he stifled a yelp.
"I know you do,"
she said, a note of triumph in her voice. "Wouldn't you like to be on top for once? Know what it feels like to just take and take and take. I need you to fuck me, Kane. Fill me up and fucking breed me. I am so ready." Kane's mouth had gone dry. He shut it and breathed through his nose. But that was worse. The scent of her arousal combined with the sourness, which was practically a miasma by this point, made him lightheaded. On the other hand, it hammered home to him the fact that Jupiter wasn't herself at the moment. His queen stopped when he said no. His queen respected that there were some things he couldn't do. His queen made him feel safe when she grabbed him by the hair and pushed him onto his back. When she held him down and rode him, it felt like freedom. Now he felt trapped between two vicious, mindless animals, and he didn't like it at all. "No," he repeated, shaking his head for emphasis. Gently, he peeled her questing hand off him, barely suppressing a shudder, and stepped back. "Not now," he said. "Not like this."
"Why not?" Jupiter asked.
Her voice had gone confused and hurt, and there was a lost expression on her face that made Kane physically ache. He wanted to wrap himself around her, keep her safe, but he knew that would only make things worse. "You are not yourself," he said, slowly and sincerely, but he felt helpless. He didn't expect her to understand, and she didn't.
"Of course I'm me,"
she said, reaching for him. He pulled back further, and her expression crumbled into one of unmistakable heartbreak.
"Kane," she said, sounding a little desperate, "why don't you want me? What's wrong with me?"
She was starting to shiver, goosebumps rising along her arms. He couldn't not do something. "I do," Kane said, letting the words out in a rush. He leaned in and closed his arms around her shoulders, unfurling his wings as much as the confined quarters would allow, and wrapping her up in them. As if by his presence he could force away the sour smell. Belatedly, he realized he was still talking. "I do, He whispered into her hair. I do want you. I love you. I love you so much. I'd be lost. I was lost without you. There's nothing wrong with you. You're perfect to me. Her words again, coming back to save him. Kane momentarily hoped she didn't remember any of this, and then decided he didn't care.
Kane,
she moaned into his chest, her voice sounding tiny and broken.
Kane, it hurts.
It'll pass, Kane said. How long had it been since her exposure? An hour? Maybe two? He couldn't say it would be over soon, so he borrowed other words someone had once said to him. You're stronger than you think, he told her. You can fight this. You can win.
You smell really, really good,
Jupiter mumbled, trying to hook a leg around his waist so she could grind down onto him. That is just the drug talking, Kane gasped, reaching down so he could lift her off of him. He felt her head roll against his chest.
No, she said. You really, really do. And you taste amazing. Did I ever tell you that? Like stardust.
I'm a botched splice stitched together with rage and stubbornness, with a hole in his mind. The words rose like bile in his throat, but he choked them down. For whatever reason, Jupiter didn't see him like that, and sometimes he could almost believe her. She was still talking, nosing into his arm, his wing, inhaling deeply.
My stardust, she mumbled,
muffled but distinct.
My angel, wolf, boy, friend, thing. You're such a good...
I should go, Kane said, hoarsely and louder than was strictly necessary, because he couldn't hear those words. Not now. Reluctantly, he pulled his wings in and pushed himself away. I will be right outside, he told Jupiter, who was gasping at the loss of contact. You'll be safe here.
No, 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 no,
Jupiter said, the words slurring together into one long wail.
No, 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 no.
She reached for him, half stood and fell. He couldn't not catch her.
No, no, no,
she said, gripping his arms and burying her face into his chest. He could feel the heat of her, even through his uniform. She was shaking under his hands.
No, no, please stay. Please, please, please don't go. I can't. I won't. Kane, it hurts. Please don't leave me alone.
Her voice had broken. Now it was a ragged whine, the cry of a wounded animal. The sound of it went straight through his carefully constructed humanity, stirring in him an entirely different set of instincts. These were not the ravenous, bloodthirsty desires of the beast. Rather, they were even more primal instincts that said, here is someone I care about who is injured. They must be protected. It was the same as the strange urge which had compelled him to say, I'm here to help you. All those months ago, when he'd first rescued her from the keepers in the clinic, even though he hadn't come to think of her as someone he should help until later, after the snafu with their extraction, after he'd realized what she was, and then after he realized what she really was. Unless he'd known in that instant, and just hadn't admitted it until later. When he thought of it like that, suddenly everything became ridiculously easy.
Shh,
he said, slowly coaxing her back into bed.
Okay, okay, I'll stay. Just lie down. Rest.
You too?
She asked, groggy but hopeful.
No, Kane said, as gently as he could. I have to keep watch.
But he sat on the end of the bed and took her boots off, tucked her feet under the blankets, and pulled them up over her waist. which was as far as he got before her hands came up and grabbed his, trying to pull them to her chest. But he held himself still, and eventually her hands fell away with a faint whine.
"Kane,"
she moaned. "It hurts, I know," said Kane, coming to kneel beside the bunk. That way he could keep his face close to her, but with a physical barrier between their bodies. Resting his chin next to her shoulder, he peered closely at her face. Her cheeks were bright red and her lips were dry. She should probably drink more water, but he didn't dare leave her. Not yet.
"It's going to hurt," he said matter-of-factly. "But not forever. It's just for tonight. You can get through this."
Jupiter swallowed and looked up at the ceiling. She grimaced.
"Stay close,"
she asked. "It's easier if you're near."
"I won't go anywhere," Kane promised. "I'll stay right here."
And he did. For the next 3 hours of fitful tossing and turning and two more outbursts of crying, he stayed, albeit chancing trips for more water, propping Jupiter's head up so he could help her drink. Then, as Kane heard the bottom rotation go off, the ship's version of midnight, Jupiter needed to use the bathroom. Immediately. She was still unsteady on her feet. Kane had to help her across the room. Luckily, however, she had the coordination to manage the space toilet on her own, and he waited patiently by the closed door. She came out sans trousers and underwear, and Kane gave up on trying to get her back into them. He considered it a victory that he managed to get her back into the bed. After that, bless whatever extra-dimensional consciousness looked after poor defective splices, she seemed calmer. The sour scent was beginning to fade, and after another hour, she slept. But Kane sat next to the bunk, and though he was dead tired and ached in places he hadn't known existed until quite recently, didn't. He remained awake, on guard, tense, if not exactly alert, even as her breathing leveled out, and, of her own free will, she burrowed deep under the covers and slept, her head half buried in the regulation pillow. To Jupiter, it felt like waking from a dream of the worst hangover she'd ever had, with bells on. There was an ache behind her eyeballs, and her mouth tasted like something furry had curled up and died in it. Peeling her eyes open, she found herself in a stark gray room. It reminded her of the one she'd been given on Captain Tsing's cruiser. Only rougher, drier, less lived in. Everything was hard, functional angles, and the floor was bare metal. The only piece of furniture beside the bunk she was presently lying on was a magnetic chair stuck to the floor a few feet away. Kane was sitting on it, his huge shoulders slumped and his hands resting in his lap. His face was downcast, his eyes closed, but he sat too still, breathed too carefully, for Jupiter to believe he was asleep. Sure enough, she'd barely been blinking at him for a moment when he opened his eyes and looked back. He looked terrible. His eyes were red-rimmed and there was a gaunt hollowness to his cheeks that made the bones stand out sharply in the cool blue light. There was also a crevice in his brow which only deepened when he saw she was awake.
"Jupiter?"
he asked. He sounded hesitant, uncertain, almost frightened. Like fog thinning, Jupiter's memory began to stretch back beyond the immediate past, and she realized with a cold horror that the nightmare she'd had of being roofied by Prince Fillion had not been a nightmare after all. It had been like being immensely turned on and disoriented at the same time, and Smasher had destroyed a door, and then Kane had showed up, and then... Then the fog closed in again, and when she tried to peer through it, all she got was a headache. "I think I need some water," Jupiter said, putting a hand to her forehead in an attempt to stop the piston which was currently hammering inside her skull. Kane got up at once and went through into an adjoining room, followed shortly by the sound of running water. The sound knocked loose another sensation in Jupiter's body as she realized how desperately full her bladder was. She went to sit up and discovered she had no pants on. So, half-naked in bed after being roofied, not otherwise injured, as far as she could tell, but Jupiter still had to take several deep, calming breaths before this spike of panic receded, to be replaced by a healthy level of alarm. "Kane?" she said, feeling her voice crack. The man's blonde head appeared in the doorway, along with the rest of him. He was carrying a small glass of water. "Kane?" said Jupiter. "Where are my pants?" Kane looked down and to the side. For a horrible moment, Jupiter thought he was averting his eyes out of shame, until she followed his gaze and found her pants and underwear neatly folded in a pile by the bunk. They didn't seem ripped or torn or otherwise compromised, and Jupiter tried to take courage in that. Still, "Why am I not wearing them?" she asked. Kane swallowed hard and crossed the room with careful, measured steps. His boots clumped heavily on the metal floor. "You took them off," he said, still not meeting her eyes as he offered her the glass of water. Jupiter took the glass but didn't drink. "And you couldn't put them back on me?" Kane, face downcast, shook his head. "Kane," said Jupiter, feeling the bubble of panic rising in her chest again. "What happened?" Kane took a deep breath, ground his teeth. "Prince Fillion dosed you with an obscure toxin. It compromised your physical coordination and judgment and caused..." "Yeah," Jupiter interrupted. "I got that. And we'll deal with him, believe me. But first, we gotta deal with this." She waved a hand at the space between them, fixing him with a stare she knew he would feel, even if he wouldn't meet her eyes. She said, "What happened after that?" Kane actually flinched away from her. Not like someone ashamed of having done something wrong, Jupiter realized. No, more like a scared dog. Suddenly her concerns pivoted 180 degrees and shot off in the other direction. She was no longer concerned over what might have been done to her, but what she might have done. If her judgment had been compromised, and she had been so very, very turned on, and Kane had clearly been with her the whole time. Oh, God. "Kane," she said, trying to keep her voice gentle, but still coming out with a hard undertone. "Kane, did I do something to you?" Kane's head jerked up and he finally looked at her, but only for a moment. Then his eyes twitched sideways to stare at the wall as he answered. "No," he said. His posture still screamed, "Please don't hit me." "Bullshit," said Jupiter, setting her glass down untouched so she could swing her legs off the bunk and start pulling on her pants. "Kane, if I did something, or said something that, I don't know, just please, I can't remember and I need to know. I need to know if I told you what goes through the back of my head when we fuck. If I said things I want to say but don't want you to hear. I need to know if I ruined the best thing that's ever happened to me." Kane exhaled windily and resettled his wings, as though his spine had got an itch. "You didn't," he began. "We didn't. I didn't." He pursed his lips. "Nothing happened." Jupiter zipped up her pants and raised an eyebrow. "Okay," she said, slowly. "Then, did I say something?" Kane was still looking away from her, but she could see how his face screwed up in pain, quickly stomped down. "You were not yourself," he said shortly. "It doesn't matter." It was killing her. There was a hard lump in her throat, and she felt lightheaded from worry. Cain, if I said something to hurt you, or that's eating at you, it matters, she said. Heck, this matters because it's eating at me. She cast around for something, anything, she could say. Look, I know you know what it's like to lose a piece of yourself, to have done things you can't remember but changed your life anyway. So please, just, can you give this piece back to me? Cain opened his mouth, shut it again. Slowly he raised his head and finally looked at her. You said some things, he began jerkily. They were not in accordance with your nature. It was distressing, but I knew they did not reflect your true desires, so I ignored them. Jupiter felt this sinking sensation in her heart. Still, it would be better to know. Cain, she whispered, please tell me. It felt like throwing herself on her own dagger. But it would be better this way, she told herself. It would be better to know. Cain winced, then swallowed. His mouth moved, forming words that wouldn't come. He had to look away again. Oh, this was not good. She'd probably gone full gags and bondage, tit clamps and ass riding with a dollop of creative use of dildos. Or she'd called him a dog. She wondered which would be worse. Unless she'd done both. In which case, Cain, whatever it is, I won't be mad, she whispered. At least not at you. Never at you. My perfect, beautiful, impossible dream come true. Cain had to try a couple more times with the silent words before they came out at all audibly. Even then they were hushed, choked things, and Jupiter had to strain to catch them. You asked me to, he began. His mouth went on moving, but no words came out. He frowned, set his jaw, and tried again. You asked me to fuck you, he breathed. Jupiter carefully raised both her eyebrows. And? Cain chewed on his lips, unhappily. Not like we have. You wanted me to take you, to dominate you, to just... He took in a sharp breath. You told me to breed you. Oh, said Jupiter, feeling as though the rug had been jerked out from under her. Then her brain caught up with what he'd actually said. Oh, shit, she said. That was really insensitive. I'm sorry. Cain shrugged unhappily, but then he smiled, just a little. You were not yourself, he said, but he still seemed tense. Okay, said Jupiter. And that was all? She barely dared hope, and yet... Cain cast his eyes skyward, as if going over a checklist in his mind. Your Majesty did make some complimentary, if fanciful, remarks regarding my personal scent and taste. He looked down and to the side. We kissed. You groped me a little. You needed to use the bathroom in the middle of the night. That's when you took your pants off. Jupiter blinked. That couldn't have been all there was. Why did he still look so unhappy? But aside from me demanding pretty vanilla penis and vagina sex, that was pretty much it? Cain shrugged, but he met her eyes when he nodded and said, pretty much. But, said Jupiter, trying to make the broken pieces Cain had given her fit together, we didn't actually have sex. Cain gravely shook his head. You didn't, Cain nodded. Even though I... You were not yourself, Cain said simply. His understated sincerity hit Jupiter like a punch to the chest. right in the feels, she thought distantly, as she fought the sudden urge to cry. Then it was her turn to look away. Oh, she said faintly. She summoned up a weak smile and glanced back at him. Thank you, she whispered. I'm sure it wasn't easy to... I mean, I've known guys who... Never mind. Thanks. Silence stretched out between them in the long minutes following. Into it, in a voice so small and quiet and broken, he barely sounded like himself, Cain said, I wanted to. Jupiter looked over in time to see the man draw in a ragged breath. She thought, oh, here we go. And then it all came tumbling out. I wanted to. With something I... Cain stumbled over and sank into the chair, burying his face in his hands. I wanted. But I told you, there's some things I want but don't want to want. There's a beast inside me, and it wants. But I don't want what it wants. I'm not it. He looked up at her, eyes wide and earnest, terrified but willing her to believe him. Jupiter felt her heart crack a little. If only you knew, Cain. You know, she said, slowly, carefully, inching up to the frightened animal. That's not exactly an unusual desire among men. She took a breath. And, to be honest, it's not something I'd be unwilling to try with you. Cain looked stricken. But it's not something I want to do, he said. It wouldn't feel right. Jupiter considered this. That's fair, she said. It's perfectly fine if we never do that. But it's just another experience. And maybe it's one I'd like sometime. Like, I don't know, what if I made you do it? No asking, just orders. She held her breath. Cain screwed his face up, as though he'd just bitten into something sour. Then his face cleared, replaced by a stunned expression. Oh, he said, sounding much more like himself. I suppose I never thought of it that way. Then he frowned. But how would it work? Jupiter shrugged. Oh, I imagine ropes would be involved, she said airily. Maybe a harness of some kind, to give me something to hold on to. Cain was getting a misty, far-off expression. Jupiter couldn't help grinning. Really, though, she said, it's fine to have fantasies that stay fantasies. I mean, she took a deep, steadying breath. God knows I've got some desires that, well, broken compass, like I said. And I don't know, even if I did find someone who'd be willing to do them with me, I don't know if I could handle the doing, if you know what I mean. Cain blinked at her, surging back to the present. He seemed more alert now, even curious. Like what? He asked. So honest and innocent, it was staggering. Now it was Jupiter's turn to open and shut her mouth without any sounds coming out. You know, I don't think I can talk about them right now, she said at last, lamely. But we will. Eventually. We'll get there. Cain nodded, but he was beginning to look unhappy again. Jupiter sat up properly, picked up her glass from the floor, and downed it in one long gulp. That was better. Cain? She said, in such a way that his head snapped up immediately. She raised her hands, arms open. Come over here, she said. Cain's expression softened into something that was almost a smile. Then he slid off the chair and, damn him, slunk across the floor on hands and knees. He hesitated at the last inch, resting his hands on the edge of the bunk, before she pulled him into an embrace, and she felt his arms go up around her back. They were shaking, but he let out an unsteady breath across her shoulder. "It's okay," she whispered, feeling his hair tickle her chin. "You did good." Kane mumbled something into her chest that sounded like, "Majesty." Jupiter leaned down to kiss his temple. "Good boy," she whispered, and felt his arms tighten around her. She sighed, stroking her hands across his shoulders, and then down, gently smoothing the feathers of his wings. "I don't suppose Fillion is still alive?" she asked a while later. Kane's entire torso shook with his suppressed laugh.
"Smasher and Gurnageth wanted to eat him," he said. "I didn't let them. He's under arrest, and we have his ship."
"Hmm," said Jupiter, still stroking the soft feathers. "That's good."
"Whatever you want done with him," Kane began.
"I'm not actually sure yet," said Jupiter. "I think..." She shifted her legs meaningfully. "I think I really need to go pee. And then I want some coffee. And then... then I'll figure out what to do about him." The coffee did not agree with her. Her stomach, it seemed, was unable to handle anything more than water, and Jupiter spent the next several hours in Kane's bunk, alternately sleeping and trying to read the brief chicanery Knight had put together, laying out what her options were for persecuting Fillion Estart. It was heavy going. She had a lot of options. Vaguely, she wondered if any of them could be applied to Titus. Some of what Fillion had said was trickling back into her memory, and his jab about Titus had stung. To be fair, at the time, she'd been rather overwhelmed by it all. It had seemed like a big, bad dream she just wanted out of. Now she realized it was just the new normal, however. She supposed she should actually do something. He'd also said other things. Things about Earth which had not made a lot of sense at the time. They still didn't, unless there was something important she was missing. Which there probably was. "You don't know the miracles you possess. You let them waste away while the universe goes on committing inconceivable atrocities for want of a solution to which you hold the key." His words had echoed through her. And now that she had the mental capacity to puzzle over them, they left her wondering. Earth was her home. It was her world. Of course she would protect it at all costs. But what about the other worlds? Balaam had said Earth was just one small part of a much larger operation. And it was. Looking over Seraphie's assets, it was obvious just how small and insignificant Earth was. She had always assumed Balaam and Titus's interest in her had been attached to Seraphie's estate as a whole, but now she wondered. Was it all about Earth after all? And if so, what was it about Earth? Half asleep, Jupiter wondered if it had not been random chance that Seraphie had had a recurrence, and that recurrence, Jupiter, had been born on Earth. The next time she woke up, she felt well enough to summon Chicanery Knight. It was ridiculous, she thought, to lie in bed wondering about these things when she had someone she could just ask. "You must understand," the fidgety man said, when she put the question to him. "I only oversaw Lord Balaam's operation of Earth. I could not compare it to his other worlds. It was, if I may say so, a very promising harvest. But only along the conventional line of things. Nothing out of the ordinary, and certainly nothing you would find valuable." "Right," said Jupiter, disappointed, but then it had been worth a try. "Only," said Chicanery Knight, frowning a little, "he did mention something in passing, something that struck me as odd, though Lord Balaam was always doing odd things." Jupiter looked up abruptly. "What did he say?" "A remark, a promise, a threat." Chicanery Knight spread his hands.
I cannot be sure. Only when I told him that Earth would not be ripe for harvest for almost another century, he told me that he would willingly harvest Earth the next day, rather than let her, you, take it from him.
Jupiter scrunched up her face. And what do you think that meant? She asked.
I could not possibly say, ma'am, said Knight, clasping his hands behind his back. I took it to mean he was immensely invested in you not gaining control of Earth.
Jupiter opened her mouth to ask if there was a way she could leverage more information out of Fillion Estart without relinquishing her right to throw him to her lieutenants, when Kane appeared in the doorway. Kane had a way of looming, Jupiter realized, when he wanted her attention. He did not exactly shuffle his wings or perk his ears. He just suddenly appeared to take up a lot more space. Currently, he was filling the entire doorway with his presence, and he was holding a communications tablet. It had a red light blinking on and off at the top.
Thank you, Mr. Knight, Jupiter said instead, waving a hand.
Chicanery Knight bowed, turned to scurry away, and had to flatten himself sideways to get around Kane.
What is it?
Jupiter asked, flopping back down on the bed as Kane ducked inside and shut the door behind him.
High security communique, Kane said in an odd, stilted voice.
He offered the tablet to her.
From Captain Tsing. Only you can open it.
So much had happened in the last day, Jupiter had clean forgot about Kane's history and file. Of course he'd guess what was in that communique. Of course he was going to stand there, nervous and uncertain if he should stay, which he was, while she took the tablet and turned it around so she could read the header. Sure enough, it said right there in the subject line, From Captain Diomika Tsing to Jupiter Jones Abraxas, re, court-martial records for Skyjacker First Class Kane Wise. Unsealing it with her wrist emblem, Jupiter read the first two lines. This was not easy to come by. Seemed someone did not want the case examined. Still, it is as complete a record as any, and I believe it contains all the recorded information. And looked up to find Kane still hovering uncertainly.
Come on, she said, patting the piece of bed beside her. I think you should probably see this.
Kane came and sat beside her, more out of habit than actually wanting to. Every line of him was tense, rough, ready to run or fight, or both.
Here, said Jupiter, offering the unsealed tablet to him.
Kane looked down, reading the first two lines, and then tore his eyes away to gaze wonderingly at Jupiter.
Don't you want to know? He asked.
Sure, said Jupiter, still holding out the tablet. But, like, this is your history, Kane. It's your missing piece. So just, I don't know, take it? You can tell me afterwards if there's anything you think I should know. Slowly, like he couldn't believe what was happening, Kane lifted a hand and took the tablet gently out of hers, taking a breath and squaring his shoulders as if going into battle. He began to read.